CJAM 99.1 FM programming is hosted almost exclusively by community volunteers. The views and opinions expressed on the following program are that of the host and their guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of CJAM FM. For more information and resources, visit our website at cjam.ca.
Hi, I'm Samantha, a past guest on CJAM's HandyLink. You're listening to HandyLink on CJAM 99.1 FM, reaching high ground in Windsor, Detroit.
To HandyLink. I'm your host, Cam Wells. This first segment is a post-dated interview, so some of the events referred to may already have happened. In this segment of our show, Joshua Best will be telling us a little bit about Cure International. So what can you tell me about Cure?
Cure International is a Christian nonprofit organization that operates a global network of 8 pediatric hospitals providing charitable surgery for children with disabilities. And we've been around since 1996. And we have, like I said, we have 8 hospitals located, 7 in Africa, and we have 1 in the Philippines. And the cool thing about Cure is that donors in the US, in the UK, and in Canada, they are the ones who really support the patient surgeries and provide them at no cost for the families that come to Cure.
So, what are some of the common surgeries that are provided?
Yeah, we treat a number of different conditions, Cam. You know, we really have 3 specialties, areas of it. And I would say the first one would be orthopedic. And that is, orthopedic surgery is kind of what we were founded on. Our founder, Dr. Scott Harrison from Pennsylvania, he kind of began the Cure Network. He was an orthopedic surgeon and founded our first hospital in Kenya in 1998 around orthopedic surgery. And he wanted to bring that expertise to some of the developing regions of the world. And he found that there was a big need for that. And so instead of sort of continuing to, you know, do sort of temporary mission trips, he wanted to build permanently into the health system in Kenya and continue to strengthen the health network and improve access to healthcare. And so we do orthopedic surgery for kids. We do plastic and reconstructive surgery. That's our newest line of services. We also do neurosurgery at one of our hospitals in Uganda.
So,
and if you want, I can tell you some of the conditions that we specifically treat as well.
That'd be great. You can give me sort of an overview there.
Yeah, our orthopedic surgeons, they treat conditions like windswept legs, bowed legs, knock knees, they do club foot. They also do some other conditions like brittle bone disease. And we also see a lot of neglected bone, like trauma from broken bones. And sometimes if it's not treated immediately or correctly, we see some patients who really need some extra care because things haven't healed properly. So that's kind of on the orthopedic side. On the neurosurgery side, you know, that's really at our one specialty hospital in Bale, Uganda. And there we really have this incredible, beautiful, I think, campus that is very specialized and treats mostly infants with hydrocephalus, which is water on the brain, encephalocele, and spina bifida. We also do brain tumors there. And so that's a very special location. And then our newest service is that we are doing plastic reconstructive surgery And we've expanded that to most of our hospitals in the network now. I know it's at least in 4 or 5 locations. And we're doing cleft lip and palate repair, as well as, you know, some skin grafts and treating burn contractures. You know, we see a lot of kids who, you know, are in certain regions of the world where, you know, their homes are smaller, and they do a lot of the cooking and sleeping and playing all in the same room. And so when there's an open fire in the same room, we end up with a lot of burns. And so when those aren't treated right away, you end up with these contractures where the skin will tighten. And sometimes, you know, they'll end up with skin kind of between their limbs that's attached, and they need it to be separated. And so our plastic surgeons do a really, really great job improving the lives of children who have burns.
So that brings up an interesting point. Sure. I'm aware there are parts of the world where children with disabilities might not be as well understood or well received, if you will, as other parts of the world, where in some cases they can be seen as a curse or a punishment. Or how does having this sort of surgery help to veer away from that sort of mentality?
Yeah, you're exactly right, Cam. You know, we end up serving a lot of children who have been through not just the physical trauma of having a disability, but also the social and emotional trauma of having that disability in a community that maybe doesn't understand it fully, or perhaps even, you know, they're stigmatized, they're discriminated against because of their disability, or bullied even. And so we end up doing a lot of, you know, we are a faith-based Christian nonprofit, so we do a lot of Christ-centered counseling for social and emotional trauma as well. And, you know, that is a really huge thing. And like you said, the surgery can really, you know, it doesn't just help the physical body of the child. It can really help them in their social growth and help them reach their full potential. And so we kind of see ourselves as not just healing their bodies, but really helping them heal as a person and looking at their whole person. And so we really think that can help a lot. Actually, we've done a lot of outreach work with local pastors as well to help counteract that stigma. And, you know, in a lot of these communities, you hit the nail on the head when you said, you know, there are some people who see this, and we see this quite a bit. They will view a disability, especially if it's a congenital condition, something that they were born with, they'll see it as a curse or as if maybe this person or someone in their family has sinned. And so we've done a lot of work with local pastors to help counteract that understanding. We've done some work we call the theology of disability. And so we kind of approach it as wanting to help children with disabilities the same way that Christ would, you know. And we don't discriminate against anyone, and we welcome everyone from every religion or race, and everybody, all children are welcome in our hospital.
So, in your time with Cure, is there any success moment or story that you'd like to share that stands out for you?
Yeah, I mean, I think there are definitely specific moments, but just to take a step back, you know, the impact overall, as we continue to grow, you know, we just opened our most recent hospital in 2021, and with a network of 8 hospitals now that are very united in our mission, we're accomplishing quite an incredible number of surgeries we're performing on site. And, you know, this past year, we performed over 18,000 surgeries for children. And those were all given free of charge. And it's just incredible for me to think about what that impact is. You know, over the course of our history, we've performed over 360,000 surgical procedures. And, you know, Kids OR, there's an organization there out of Scotland, you know, and they estimate that a child who receives surgery in a developing country, like the ones that we serve in, actually contributes, I believe it is $37,000, almost $38,000 towards a nation's GDP. And so it's amazing to quantify some of the impact that surgery can have on the life of somebody who has a disability that is actually treatable. And so I think when I think of success, that's the first thing I go to. I mean, obviously, there are every individual story is a whole is a whole other, you know, discussion about success too, right? Because it's such an emotional thing to have a disability like this and be stigmatized. And then to recover from it is just an amazing journey that each person goes on. I don't know if you know this, but in Canada, our Cure Canada, the branch that exists, they're really focused on helping our hospitals in Malawi and in Uganda. And, you know, they've already donated over $1 million, the group there, and $1 million toward the new ICU, a new ICU in Uganda. And they're donating over $4 million Canadian to a new surgical center in Malawi. And, you know, I was reading one of the stories that we just had come out of Malawi, and there's this incredible girl named Ethel. Maybe I can just share one story of one of our patients, if that's okay with you.
Yeah.
Well, this girl, Ethel, you know, she was born with clubfoot, and so she's 14 years old, and she's been walking on the outsides of her feet since she was born. And, you know, it became a real sore topic for her. And, I mean, obviously, she was struggling physically, but, you know, the idea of not being able to wear, and for her, one of the things she just wanted to do was wear normal shoes. And, you know, she got teased, and people thought she was cursed, and everything that we talked about. And until, you know, one of these pastors who received our training as part of our outreach learned from Cure and our staff members that, you know, this isn't something that she has done wrong. That's not why she has a disability, and she deserves our care and our support. And so he met her and then reached out to her parents, told them about Cure. She came to the hospital and received surgery on her feet and is now walking almost perfectly. You know, it's a complete transformation. And, you know, some of her quotes, I actually wrote a couple of them down just to share with you. One of them, she says, you know, as she's coming to the hospital, she says, I'm ready to be helped and to be healed. And then another one, she said, afterward, I see God's intervention in all of this. And so, man, every child is a success story at Cure.
Right. Thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Sure, no problem. Yeah.
Thanks. In this segment of our show, Alec McFarlane will be telling us a little bit about his work in the deaf community. So what can you tell me about your work in the deaf community and with Alice?
Yeah, that's a tall order here. Alice and I have been working together for the past 16, going on 17 years. I met her in Puerto Rico. She happened to be down there. Her daughter is an interpreter who works for, I believe, Sorensen, which you may know of as a video relay service and a regular interpreting service for the deaf community. And I met her by chance, and we've been working together, putting together deaf culture. Library, a lot at a created library with a special area of interest in the deaf community, and that's set up in Maryland. And so that's the basics.
So, what are some of the advantages of having a library for individuals with hearing loss and who are deaf?
Yeah, well, the approach that we take is just a public library, it's a state library grant. And so access for deaf and other disabled people is part of what they do. But it's really intended for everybody. And part of the idea here is to demystify the nature of deafness simply because people don't know. And so the library helps deaf people get services, but it also helps their parents and families and teachers and friends understand more about, you know, what deafness is, the history of deafness, our people, and movers and shakers. So it's an important function in the ability to, again, open up the set to information for people who are not deaf and resources for people who are.
So that would seem to have a great advantage of having people who are deaf and people who aren't being together in the same environment, just sharing a common interest.
I agree with that, here, and that's, again, the whole idea. I'm also a book author myself, or I am a contributing book author here. There's a book called Disabilities in Libraries, and it's an academic textbook know, disabilities and services there. So in Chapter 6, they wrote, deafness is a great equalizer. And my point here is pretty much the same, that trying to see deaf people in a larger lens, seeing that they are really much more part of the world than we're aware of.
So, in your work, to sort of level the playing field for deaf individuals, has there been any success moment or story you'd like to share?
Oh, well, again, for the deaf community, and Alice Lukey Hagemeyer, woman that I have been working for the last 17 years, the story is of perseverance. And the fact that, you know, she's been working at this, trying forever to get information out into the public domain to demystify deafness. And Alice Hagemeyer is a honorary member of the American Library Association, and that's their highest honor. And she earned that award here, I think, in 1991. And she is going to be 91 years old come next week. And on February 22nd, she will be 91 years old. And so her success story, I mean, where we met and where she carried forth these ideas and was able to get some of it into fruition. We made an actual law, an actual library.
So, if you could send any message to the community about the need for equal inclusion and equal access to learning materials, what would you say?
Well, I would say that this is overdue. There's absolutely no reason why anybody should be deprived of access to information. And in the deaf community, where people who are born deaf who do not have the spoken language, who have no hearing, they need access and sign language. And the American Sign Language is really important to them because it helps, you know, visualize communication and, you know, makes it possible for them to see things that they can't hear. And education, you know, starts at birth. And so one of our advocacy points is that sign language should be taught to every child from birth, that deaf children, not hard of hearing children, all children. And part of the reason is because a deaf child or a hearing child, doesn't matter, either one of them can speak in sign language before they can actually speak with their voice. They can communicate and, you know, get rid of the frustrations and the crying and stuff. I don't know why. But boy, if you teach them about milk, the sign for milk, and the baby is able to ask for something and communicate with you. And so we see that as the opening up opportunities, not just for deaf people, but, you know, the whole of us need to communicate back and forth.
Like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Yes, sure.
HandyLink will be right back after these commercial messages, so stay tuned.
I'm proud of my promotion.
Needs more shoes.
I earned it.
And business suits.
It is a big deal for our family.
Renovators.
I like the people I'll be working with.
Restaurants.
I still need a lot before I get started.
Carly's, hair salon, and luggage.
I know our kids are so proud of me.
Jewelry engraver.
It was my idea to put our company on the radio.
Promotion deserved. Be where anyone who needs you can meet you. Be on the radio. Your customers are already here.
Welcome back to HandyLink. I'm your host, Cam Wells. Earlier in our show, Joshua Best told us a little bit about Cure International, and we heard from deaf advocate Alec McFarlane. In this segment of our show, Irina Sidsheva will be telling us a little bit about Wood Green. So what can you tell me about Wood Green?
So Wood Green has been around since 1937, and I believe we're it's safe to say that we are one of the largest social service agencies in Toronto, serving approximately 37,000 people each year. We have a variety of programs, and they really focus on the home individual. So we have childcare, we have housing, we have settlement services, specific health and wellness supports, And our goal is to really help people live well in the community, and not just live well, but thrive for as long as possible.
So I'd imagine with the health and wellness aspect in particular, this could have a huge impact on the disability population.
Yep, a lot of clients or individuals that we're seeing through our programs have various disabilities or various abilities, as one would put it. And there's a wide range, you know, and sometimes even within our kind of non-health programs, we're also seeing a lot of folks who have disabilities, who have various health concerns, mental health concerns, substance use issues, folks who are neurodivergent.
So what are some of the key benefits to these individuals of having that support and having those programs available?
I think, and obviously I'm biased, but I think the beauty of Wood Green is that we're able to offer holistic wraparound support under one roof. So whereby individuals may need, say housing, they may need support with filing their taxes, they may need some mental health counseling, and they may need to know how to navigate either health or social services systems. We're able to do all of that under one roof, and we really approach the individual as the whole person and try to build the care based on their needs, on their wishes, on their goals. So rather than kind of us as providers assuming what the person may need, we really work with the individual to let us know what is it that they want, and then we build the service around that.
So how do you reach out to folks in the community to let them know that you are a support for them and you do offer things like mental health counseling, etc.?
So we have a website, www.woodgreen.org, which is our central kind of home that provides all of the information on the various supports, as well as direct links on how to get to the services directly from the website. We also do a lot of promotion within the community, whether it may be through community forums, flyers, word of mouth. Anytime we have a new service or a program or an update to a service or a program, we send it through our networks of support. Through our networks of other service providers, and basically then just ask people to spread the word. And I would say a lot of individuals that come through our doors, they find us just by Google or word of mouth. Somebody receives services and now they're sharing information, and then sort of their friends, their family, their colleagues are coming through our doors as well.
So you mentioned a significant portion of your clients are individuals with disabilities. Do you ever encounter any myths or stereotypes about such people?
All the time. Unfortunately, I think, you know, our current society is anything but inclusive or accessible. And a lot of individuals get pigeonholed into sort of what visibly may be observed. So for example, a lot of times people would make assumptions about how one looks and sort of than what they're capable and are capable of doing. We also experience a lot of stereotypes, a lot of prejudice toward people who live with mental health issues, with substance use concerns, folks who are neurodivergent. You know, sometimes we see it within the individuals themselves, so sort of that self-stigma, because the bombardment of societal messages constantly telling them that you're not enough, you're missing something. And so we try to really hard to address it, at least like within our programs and services. We try to support and empower individuals and really sort of, you know, supporting them in their wellness, but also in their almost like self-love, self-kindness, if that makes sense.
It does. Yeah. To look at the converse side of things, in your time with Wood Green, supporting folks who need it, has there been any success moment or story that stands out for you you'd like to share?
Well, there's just so many. And I would say, honestly, the favorite part of my job is when I get to speak directly to the individuals who are coming through our doors when they share their stories around, you know, this is where I started, this is kind of, you know, this is an extreme example of my life was really falling apart. And through the supports that I received from so-and-so within an organization, I'm now able to achieve whatever the goal may be. We hear those stories all the time. And it's just really heartwarming, but also motivating and encouraging. And, you know, I would say for myself and for our staff, just gives us more of that power to continue doing the work that we're doing. Because as you can imagine, we're still working within a very underfunded system within society that still does not support folks with various abilities very well or is inclusive and accessible. And so it does feel daunting at times, but when we have those little pockets of thank you, you've really helped me feel better, or you made me feel like a human, we do hear that feedback a lot. It truly makes our day.
So if you could send any message to the community about the need for programs such as yours, what would you say?
Well, I mean, we're here. I would say starting for anybody who may need supports, our services are available. We try not to turn anybody away as much as possible. And even though we're a Toronto-based agency, even if you reach out to us from other areas of the city, sometimes the province, we'll try to figure out how to connect you to supports. So if you're looking for specific kind of health and wellness services, we encourage you to call 416-572-3575 into our central intake line. And again, we'll try to figure out how to best support you. We also operate Toronto Seniors Helpline, which is a resource for people to receive counseling, but as well as connection to various services and supports within and outside of Wood Green. And that number is 416-217-2077. And we also, as kind of we launch into the tax season, we have a really amazing tax clinic, which has been supporting folks with various needs, various abilities. And it is accessible to anyone. And again, if people are looking for that support, we're able to do it in person, virtually, as well as via the phone. And all you need to do is just call 416-645-6000, extension 1187. And for the larger community, I guess my message would be just be kind. Be kind to yourselves and extend that kindness to others.
Like, thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Yeah, for sure.
Thanks. What Alex shared about pushing for library access might seem on the surface like a simple thing, but to a person with a disability, it can make all the difference. Accessibility of education is a critical thing. I think we all learned this during the pandemic in particular. Online resources were created, but not necessarily with accessibility in mind. And some students did have to struggle. For someone with a disability to be told, you're not going to have the same access to information just because you process it in a different way, that's unjustifiable in my opinion. But the fact is, the more we push for equality, the more we prove persons with disabilities are in fact intelligent, articulate people, the more respect we're given as a people. But that begins with a fundamental idea of education. A person can't speak with intelligence or authority about something they're not informed on. A person with a disability has as much right to learn, to grow, to explore their own capabilities as anyone else in society. And pushing for equality, the right to learn, is not an unreasonable request. It's not taking more than a person should be granted. It is simply asking for a level playing field, an equal opportunity. And that is where progress is made, with the understanding that we all have something to contribute. This has been HandyLink. I'm your host, Cam Wells, reminding you, we're all equal, so get on out there and have yourselves a good one. Something tells me you've earned it, folks. We'll see you next week.